welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at director Mitchell Lichtenstein and his 2007 film, Teeth. Returning on the show today to talk about Teeth is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So as you see, now when it comes to personal enjoyment, I would say, yeah, I liked it. Maybe not like the highest of recommends. But for what it is, I thought the movie was enjoyable. But like as you see in my script, one of the questions I have, I don't think this, well, I, personal enjoyment, I thought it was fun. I'm not sure if this movie's good. There's a few complaints I have. I don't think the acting is very good. I think it's very, I'm not sure if that's on purpose, but I think it's very stilted and over the top. There's a lot of loose ends that don't get wrapped up. It seems like the cops and people are investigating the crimes, and you think that was going to go somewhere, but at the end it never does, and she just kind of wanders off. I didn't quite get what the whole motif of the nuclear facility that's in the background. I'm assuming that something in the water, in the air, affected her, and that's why she has, the vagina dentata. But yeah, so like all those things don't think the movie's good, but for what it is, like I say, it's like campy, trashy fun.
It is campy, trashy fun. I would not say that this movie is good, mm-hmm. but there are things about it that are good.
Yes.
And the acting is pretty poor across the board, but I thought the main character was pretty good given the material. She doesn't play it for laughs. She plays it seriously. You know, she plays mm-hmm. a character who's very innocent and doesn't know anything. And I thought she did a good job with that.
Yeah, it seems that, but everyone else is the characters, like even that the kind of forbidden love romance she has with the first boy, that felt like really cheesy. Some of the dialogue is just awful.
It's sort of ABC After School Specialist.
Yes, very ABC After School Specialist.
But with a dark side.
With a dark side, that's a very good point. So, yeah.
Now, the nuclear facility, see, I thought that was first of all meant to be sort of ironic. Like, who lives next to a nuclear plant?
Yeah, maybe it's like sort of a mocking of, well, this is a Canadian film, but I was like America's suburbia, you know, 50s, nuclear threat looming. But once again, the one thing I took away from it is like, that's explaining how she has the teeth.
That's what I was thinking. Like that, you know, if you grow up and they're literally
accident.
The first scene is in a little baby pool.
Yeah.
So what's in the water is like the question, of course. And you find out what's in the water. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, the looming nuclear plant makes you think, what's in the water? You know, maybe she's deformed in that way because of the nuclear
yeah,
waste.
That's the thing I got out of it. And the way it's campy, trashy fun, I will say, is one of the things is the violence can be very graphic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after all, so this is about vagina dentata, teeth in the vagina. So there is a lot of castration going on in this movie. And they show the castrated penises a lot in this movie. And so that's going to be, that might be a hard watch for some people, seeing castration. But it's so over the, it's not like supposed to be realistic. It's so over the top. It's clear that obviously they're going to be fake props. I mean, it's not like they're actually going to do that. But like, you know, it's so clear it's over the top where it doesn't like bother me because it's not trying to be realistic violence. It's just trying to be completely silly, completely goofy
and gross.
Stupid and gross.
Gross.
Yeah.
So, I mean, then that's part of it. It's like it's shocking and yet it's sort of funny.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gross. I mean, that's a fine line to... You can see how this movie could have really gone in another direction and been just completely unwatchable. But, you know, I should say that I know that this particular director, Mitchell Lichtenstein, went to college and had Camille Paglia as an instructor one year. And Camille Paglia is this Asian provocateur. She's sort of a anti-feminist. She's an intellectual, but she challenges the status quo no matter what it is. So, you know, if it's some sort of feminist trope, she always wants to take it down and unpack it and make people sort of face up to facts that maybe are uncomfortable. So it doesn't surprise me at all that she would have a class where she talked about this myth of teeth in the vagina.
Yeah.
That just sounds so Camille Paglia. Like, In fact, I can't think of anybody else who would do it, but she definitely would. And it made a big impression on Mitchell Lichtenstein because he thought this would make for a good movie. And that's where he got the idea from.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, Vagina Dentata is an actual thing. I mean, I think I learned about it because I was, for my gen ed requirements, it was either my psychology or sociology class. And I thought it was something Freud came up with, as in explaining men's impotence or erectile dysfunction problems, is that they are fear of vagina dentata, like if they have sex, what's going to happen with the vagina with the teeth. But I guess in the movie, they're portraying like this is some thing that goes back forever, and it's in a lot of cultures, and it's like a fear, I guess, of women and their sexuality, I guess?
Yeah, okay. I guess. And, you know, when you look at, like, if you ever go into any, view any old museums that have, like, medieval artifacts, you'll see some of those chastity belts were...
Razor.
Yeah, you know, so you were thinking that the idea is not that far-fetched. What I think is kind of interesting about the way it's presented in this movie is that she doesn't have any control over it. It's a defense mechanism that she cannot... will or stop.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a fascinating aspect to the idea to
me. I think she can will it because, you know, when she sees the one guy and they're getting together and they're having sex, like, it doesn't happen to him.
Right.
Once she figures out that this whole thing was a plot so he can get, like, bragging points for his friends, then she kind of wills it on and then it happens to him.
See, I didn't think she willed it. I think that the mechanism that protects her went without her wanting it to.
But she was completely okay when it happened. She was like, oh, I guess you're just not the hero. And then she just walks away. I thought it was like, oh, so you think you can just use me for, you know, bragging points for the boys? Well, guess what? This is happening. You know?
Chomp.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was, you don't understand what kind of weapon I have. But I didn't think that she necessarily controlled it. And the reason I say that is because she eventually gets so worried about her... you know, the secret that she has, that she goes to see a doctor. And of course, he's a creep, too.
Yeah.
And but she wants to find out what's going on, you know, what's happening to me and why? How can I deal with it? And she finds out that she can't deal with it. She can't control it. She can't stop it. So that's why she decides to leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all the men in this movie, I'd say, except for the father, are all creeps.
They are all creeps.
It's like not the best view of men in the movie.
But these characters have to be creeps because everybody that ends up on the wrong side of the they're not sympathetic. They all deserve it if that's the right word.
Yeah, everybody she runs into are like rapists and terrible people.
Terrible people. Even her stepbrother in the baby pool.
Yeah. You know, I was like, that was one thing. I kind of knew what the thing was about. I was like, I don't know why I don't want to know why this kid got his hand bit at that time. Like, I don't even know why he got the thing.
And then you think about it and you think, okay, I know why.
Yeah. But what's interesting is, so the main character, we go through this arc where she's very religious, strongly pro-abstinent. And what's interesting is, like, you could say the film is mocking that, but when you really think about it, was she better off being abstinent and, like, not having to deal with all these men who were trying to rape her? So it's almost like some people say, well, it's obviously making fun of that, but it is getting rid of, you know, not being abstinent, part of that. Was she better off or worse off than where she was in the beginning of the movie?
Well, making her abstinent virgin at the beginning of the movie does two things. One, it makes her undeserving of anything bad that happens because she's pure.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing it does is that it makes the character someone who tried to do everything right and in spite of that was still victimized. Then this, because you can't ever be protected. And I think, I don't know if this lands on the same way with men when they watch it, but there is no sense in a actual woman's life where you're ever that empowered, where something's going to kick in and protect you from that threat. So there's something very satisfying about the movie because she, in the end, she's really not going to be victimized. She can't be victimized.
No.
What a different way of looking at being a woman. So when I watched it with my daughter at the end, I said, so what did you think? And she said, you know, kind of makes you wish you had teeth.
Yeah, and that it does have this ending where she's, you know, she's escaped town, fled town, and then she hitches a ride, and then once again this another creepy guy, mm-hmm. he's locking the doors, licking his lips, expecting, instead of being scared or upset, she just kind of puts on this face
like, okay.
Okay, like, yeah. You asked for it, you know, you're going to get it.
See, that is something that no woman actually ever feels, which is why it's such a satisfying ending. It's so perfect, mm-hmm. because it does put it right where you want the focus to be for a change. Like, what if you never had to be worried that anybody was going to attack you?
One of the things, like, you talk about at the ending, one of the things I didn't quite get is we see once, like, she takes the victims. Like, she kills the one guy who tried to rape her, and then the doctor who tried to rape her, and does the boy die? I think, is he just getting surgery?
The one in the lagoon?
No. The one who was like, oh, I just did this so I could get bragging rights.
Oh, that's a good question. I just assumed, yeah, that was a fatal wound.
Okay, so assuming all the victims are dead. You see the cops investigating this. You see, like, the surgeries when they're like, man, what's going on? All these things got to be connected.
I think the surgery was the guy getting his fingers attached. And I thought that was a hilarious scene because they were saying, how'd this happen again?
Yeah. And you have all of these things happening. You have cops investigating this. And they're like, there's got to be a connection here. When they keep saying that, you have a feeling it's going to be investigated. It's going to come all back to her. And it never does. And I don't know. Like, if once again we're playing armchair directors, I would take out all the scenes with the cops and even with the surgery, because the way they were showing those scenes, it was suggesting that they're going to get on her trail and that something's going to come to head. And they're going, you know, like you said, there's going to be a showdown between her and the villagers. Basically, the truth is going to come out that she's been doing this some way. And it never does. At the end, she flees town, but nobody's on her trail. It's just because her mom's dead and she killed her brother, so there's nowhere else to go. Did they kill is the dad still alive?
I can't remember what happens to the dad. I don't remember him being a bad character, so...
Yeah, I think he's okay. But it's just the dad, so she leaves. And then once again, it gets into that situation with the guy who picked her up. But it was just like... They built up like there was going to be a showdown between the local law enforcement or whatever, and it never really leads to that. So I just don't know why they had those scenes in the first place.
I think it was to make it seem like they were closing in on her, and that's why she had to run. Because if you think about, like, the classic monster stories, like, you know, Frankenstein, mm-hmm. whatever, when the mob shows up, you know, do they want to kill them or do they want them to run them out of town? Mm-hmm. So as long as you leave town, then they don't have to. Because nobody really wants to talk about it. And nobody really wants to admit. Nobody who this happens to admits that that's why it happened. Mm-hmm. The doctor doesn't say why his fingers are gone. Mm-hmm. The brother in the beginning never says why he had his fingers bitten. So it's sort of a simplistic story because, of course, why would they just, oh, well, she left town. Okay, well, never mind. But it is kind of like she had to run away.
Yeah.
And live on somehow, you know, sort of underground because she doesn't know what to do with this power.
Yeah, I guess what I would have liked to have seen is because she leaves, but like nobody's really suspected her specifically. They think so these killings are connected, but nobody's like, it's her, it's this woman.
It's always the quiet one.
Yeah, like I would have just liked to have seen at least one scene that would have made it more sense where it's just like, oh, who's she? She's knew all these people. And then, like, they make the connections, and then they go after. Then she has to flee town. I would have liked to have a little bit of that because even though she flees, nobody really knows who she is, and she's not really connected in anything yet. So she doesn't really, in my opinion, she didn't really have a lot to run away. She didn't have a reason to run away yet.
Yeah, I think the reason one of the reasons why they might have done it that way is because that way she remains in control of the situation. Instead of, because, you know, you don't know whether she really has control over it. So you don't really want the mob to capture her and study her under a microscope or whatever, because, you know, you want her to get away.
Good point.
So I think that's why they did it that way, that she outsmarts them before they figure out that it's her. She decides she better get out of there. I think that's why they did it. Of course, this is Mitchell Lichtenstein's, you know, debut movie. And, you know, one thing I'd like to say about him is that he's the son of Roy Lichtenstein, who's mm-hmm. famous for these very cartoonish, pictures of, they were all of women, you know, with tragic love lives, you know, doomed love stories. Mm-hmm. So having grown
very
up with that,
strip
very looking. Comic strip.
Yeah.
So if you think of a comic strip sensibility where the women are always in peril, it's interesting that his son would make this movie.
Yeah, and you're talking about his father. I know, looking at his other films, one was Happy Tears. And if you see the poster for that movie, it's one of those
Lichtenstein
drawings. It's like this comic strip woman, and she's got like a tear running down
yes.
her face. And I was like, oh, okay, now I can see the connection.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting is, while looking at this film, I always, whenever we do these films, I always like to see, well, what's kind of the consensus? What's the word on the street about this movie? You know, what do the people think? And you look at it, like, you know, once again, you go on Rotten Tomatoes, it seems critics overall are pretty responsive towards it. It's got 80%. But you look at audience reviews on any website, it's got really low reviews.
It's either a 1 or a 10.
Yeah. I think I haven't looked at what the audiences think about it, but once again, we've been kind of praising about it for it's fun. It's got some interesting ideas. You know, it's, even though it's extremely violent, it's comical violence, so it's not disturbing. So I can see why the critics like it, but the audiences, like I said, it's got like 40-something percent of people on the Rotten Tomatoes site didn't like it. You look at like IMDb, it's got like a 6. You look at anything like Letterboxd is another thing I use, or that drops it way down to like a 2.8. So it seems that a lot of people really hate this movie. And what makes you think? Because I think I have an idea. Like I said, I thought bad acting, the story, why I said it's interesting, there's a lot of silly stuff in it, and I can, like when I say this is a good kind of fun horror movie, it's not like in the way I think Evil Dead or like The Exorcist or The Shining is. Those movies, I think, are much, much, much better than this movie, but this is still okay.
Well, those movies you mentioned are all based on very well-regarded books. You have to admit, I mean, this movie is not for everybody.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But it's also... I mean, just the subject matter. It's a unique take, although I did find out it's a remake of a Japanese film called Sexual Parasite Killer Pussy from 2004. I know, it makes me laugh just to say that title. So it's a unique idea, but, you know, you haven't seen this before. I mean, that alone, the originality
yes.
is worth something. It's clumsy.
Very clumsy.
It's very clumsy. But, you know, I think the mashup between serious ideas, funny execution, unique idea, gore but silly, it's funny and gross and disgusting and horrifying all at the same time.
Yeah, very good.
So I definitely saw some of the same reviews. People either thought, boy, this is really, really out there and deserves,
either,
you know, a 10.
Yeah.
And then there are other people like, oh, my God, this is just the nastiest thing
this
I ever
saw.
But, you know, I will say I did notice that most of the people who gave it the low scores were men. And I completely understand why.
Yeah. We're, like I said, this movie doesn't have the best view of men because we're all just a bunch of creeps and rapists, except the father.
Well, you know, I think, though, that it's maybe that's part of the nuclear fallout, too. Maybe it's turned all the men into monsters. Maybe that's the real monster. But you're right. They don't really show you any positive male characters. But it's not so much that they don't exist. It's that the ones who are awful get what's coming to them.
Yeah, and I think, once again, like you said, so you can say, well, they had what's coming to them, you have to make them terrible people, because say it's consensual and it's not like some guy trying to get bragging rights and he loves her, and then that happens to him, you're like, well, he didn't deserve that. So, but like, once again, maybe that could have done something more where you're like not necessarily rooting for the protagonist, like, well, that guy didn't deserve it, he didn't do anything wrong. But it makes it easier for the audience. Like, well, he had it coming, obviously. He's a terrible person. Oh, he's doing terrible things. Like, he definitely has it coming. So,
well,
I feel no sympathy for him.
I felt no sympathy for him because it's not that he went and got the bragging rights later.
He does it
while they're doing
it. That is one of the stupidest things ever. It's like, oh, yeah, she's definitely going to be okay with this. She's not going to be offended by this in any way whatsoever. I mean, not saying he should have done this in any way, but if you're going to do that, like, call your buddy after. It's like, hey, guess what just happened?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes.
But I guess it's like he needed her voice to make sure he wasn't like, oh, you're just lying.
Well, I think he just felt so... See, that's actually, I think, part of the genius of the story is that it's the complacency that men have that they think they can get away with anything. Because mm-hmm. what can you possibly do? Well, see, you know, there's there's something mm-hmm. she can do. That's like this extra element to the story that I think women get is that, mm-hmm. you know, you would never feel like you had any power in that situation. And she's mm-hmm. so unassuming. Certainly nobody thinks that she's going to retaliate in some way.
Good, very good point.
So it's unexpected.
Definitely unexpected. Very fun. I mean, one of the scenes where I was like, oh, my God, it's when it happens to the brother and then the dog comes in and eats it up. I was like, I'm like,
that's right.
I was like, oh,
I forgot that was disgusting.
I was like, oh, my God. But I was still laughing. It's just, oh, my God, this is so ridiculous.
It is so ridiculous and gory and gross. Mm-hmm. But in a good way.
I would have loved to have seen like a theater showing that particular scene and just like what the audience would have done. Because it reminds me of when I went to see John Wick 2 in mm-hmm. theaters. Like there's some pretty violent stuff. And one of the scenes, even in the first John Wick movie, they talk about how he's great at he's this badass assassin. He's like, he killed the guy with a pencil. Uh-huh. They keep building up. And in the second movie, he's fighting these guys at a bar. And he sees a pencil. And then he just gets the pencil and just shoves his head through, and the pencil comes through his eye socket. And then everybody in the theater is like, oh! I was like, I can imagine when the dog eats the mm-hmm. thing. I was like, I can imagine people just go, oh! Yeah, yeah. Would have been a great audience moment. So, yeah, we've been talking about Gretchen Mitchell Lichtenstein. I know, looking at his IMDb, he's directed two other movies. One was called Happy Tears. That's got Parker Posey in it, a couple other people. So
she
it's
always
not,
does indie stuff.
Yeah, so it's not like a bunch of complete unknowns, because I don't know anybody in this movie. And then there is Angelica. That was a movie that's got Jenna Malone in it. Like I told you off before the show, it's like got like 10 reviews on Internet Movie Database, which means like nobody's seen it. Except, mm-hmm. like, I don't even know who like how you can watch that. So... I'm assuming you haven't seen his other two movies.
I haven't seen them, but I sort of expect them to be edgy.
Yeah, edgy and maybe like kind of campy or trashy and a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, a little John Waters.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's a little bit like John Waters. John Waters, you know, he's kind of, you know, it's his movies. Like, they're very campy. They're also pretty trashy. I mean...
And a little grotesque.
Very grotesque, especially within something like, you know, the infamous poop-eating scene in Pink Flamingos, which even that, like, that's a little bit too much for me, but... Yeah. So getting close to the end of my questions, is there anything else you want to bring up?
Well, I did want to mention that I did use this, and not even the whole movie, but just a clip, one time in class. And it was the scene where she goes to the gynecologist.
Okay.
Because you don't see anything. It's all implied. You never see her, by the way. You don't see
whatever see his hands get chewed off, though, don't we? I mean,
yes.
Like the after effect when it's bleeding everywhere. Okay.
Right, but you don't see her body.
Yeah.
There's no real nudity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even when you see, you know, the dismembered parts, it's, you know, looks fake.
Yeah. Well, how did it go over?
Not well. I think they were genuinely shocked to the point where it was like, well, maybe I shouldn't use this because it's just too, it's too much. You know, it's too much. Although I thought that this was for a women's studies class, I thought it would be a really interesting discussion about empowerment and Camille mm-hmm. Paglia and all of these other things. But after showing the clip, I realized, no, this is really...
Well, what was the age of, like, the class? Was it, like, people my age, or was it, like, you know, adults?
They were all adults, lots of older people, but then there was a younger student who had been homeschooled and I think was kind of sheltered because she was really... shocked her.
Okay. I mean, I don't want to make too much of general assumptions, but I think, like, when it comes to adults and people in their 40s or whatever, I think there might be a little bit more shocked when it's something to violence where, I don't know, people my age are like, eh, whatever, I've seen
Especially the gross-out scenes. But, you know, I also think that Carrie would have that same reaction.
I don't think the original one was that violent. I mean...
It's not the violence. It's the sight of the white dress being covered with
the pig's
blood.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's really hard for some people to look at. You know, just the utter humiliation of this girl. And then, of course, she goes crazy and kills people.
Okay. All right. Well, we're getting close to the end of the show, but so I guess I need to make an announcement here about the future of the show. Sorry to hope this doesn't come too as much of a shock to people, but this will be my last show. I am leaving Dragon Digital Radio. This will be the last episode I'm doing with the Armchair Directors, but that does not mean that Armchair Directors itself is gone. You are taking it over, so I don't want to put you on the spot too much or anything and say, what are your exact plans? But if you have any ideas on where you would like to take the show once I'm gone, just kind of air them out now. Go ahead.
Well, it won't be the same without you, of course, Alex, hope we can still do some shows, you know, remotely. But I'm planning on just... I have to actually give it some thought of what the format will be, but it will be a half an hour of discussing movies, and I'm not sure if it's going to be solo, just me, or if I will have guests, but stay tuned.
Yeah, definitely. Just stay tuned, and, you know, you are, of all the guests I've had, you're the one I've had on the most, and it's been great. It's been 3 years, and really looking forward to what else you do. I'll be listening, and once again, it's going to be every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com, category Armchair Directors. It'll still be there. Just stay tuned. And you know what? Just because I'm gone doesn't mean that the quality will lessen, you know. So keep tuned. And last question, just tell us a bit about your classes.
Well, we're coming up on winter session where I'm teaching Intro to American Cinema and Intro to the Humanities. Those are both online. And then in spring, I will do those classes and also Intro to Film, World Cinema, and Women in Film.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been discussing Mitchell Lichtenstein and his 2007 film Teeth. Professor Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today, and look forward to seeing you host the Armchair Directors in the future.
Thank you, and I thank you for 3 great years.
It's hard to believe 3 years. I know. You know what the first show was?
No, I can't remember.
It was Mike Giuliano was on. We talked about To Have and Have Not. It feels just like yesterday, even though it's been like over 3 years ago.
Okay.
It's crazy.
To record or record not?
Yeah. We go from Howard Hawks and this Bogart classic in the beginning
to teeth.
Okay.
Have fallen.
Yeah, and then before that, we talked about a Neil Breen film. It's like, we really go out with the best films, don't we?
That's right. We go out with a bang.
All right, to the Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, it's true, vagina dentata, vagina dentata, vagina dentata.